Good to see you this morning. You have your Bibles. Take them and turn to Psalm chapter 10. Psalm chapter 10. Where's God? Where are you, God? Where's God? Have you ever asked that question? Have you ever wondered that in your life? And if you have, if you've ever wondered that, you know the feeling and you know the frustration that comes with that. But if you have never felt that, trust me, most likely someday you will. And why? Well, there will be that dreadful difficulty, that terrible tragedy, that paralyzing pain that comes to your life, and it's so great. It's something that is so bad that it will sometimes cause you to wonder, where are you, God? Where are you at? And if you don't take that thought and arrest it with some really good information, some sound doctrine, you will make the mistake that would cause you to conclude that God is not who you thought God should be, and God is not who you always believed He would be, or that maybe God doesn't even know what's going on. Because you'll think, you'll say, well, He must not know. He must not know what's happening to me. Yeah, God knows a lot of things, but He doesn't seem to know what I'm going through right now. He just doesn't know. But wait a second. Doesn't the Bible teach that He knows everything? That God is all-knowing? Yet, if He knows everything, then why am I so alone right now? Why am I going through this all by myself? And if the Bible teaches that He is everywhere, in every place, at every minute, when He's there and He's there and He's everywhere and He sees and He knows, why don't I sense Him? Where are you, God? And when you go through those times, if you don't have solid doctrine and a firm faith, you'll come to the conclusion that He doesn't work. That maybe God's busy. Maybe God's too busy for me. Maybe He can't keep up with what's going on in my life, in my part of the world, because there's so much going on in that other part of the world. Maybe He just doesn't have time for me. And then you'll begin to conclude, well, I guess that's just the way it has to be. Maybe that's the way it is supposed to be. He can't do anything because He's not doing anything. And if He could do anything, then He would be doing something for me now. And if you begin to think that way, then you will begin to take on this attitude of fate, F-A-T-E. You'll have this attitude of fate rather than a spirit of faith. And it'll just take over your life, and it'll just control your emotions and just take over everything. And you start to think, Well, God's not doing what God is supposed to do. And you will even think, if I was God, you ever done that? If I was God, this is what I would do for me in this situation. If I was God, this is what I would do for my family right now. If I was God, this is the way I would handle things. And 15 years ago today, that's what many people were thinking. That's what a lot of us were thinking. If I was God, this is what I would do. So where are you, God? Where are you at? Where were you, God? You'll remember that day. For most Americans, it started out as any normal Tuesday would start out, just like any other day all over America. We were hopping in our cars and driving off to work, and people were jumping into airplanes and flying across the country, just like any other day. I remember that day I got up early and I headed to the hospital to visit a sick church member. And after that, I went by the office and I sat down and I began working on a sermon for that week. And that sermon I never preached. I never got to preach that sermon. And it's still on my computer at home, but I have never preached it. And I remember as I was sitting in the office that day, my secretary comes in and she says, "Something's going on. Something's going on in New York." And at that time, we didn't have a television at the church. And I remember getting in my car and turning on the radio, and I'm driving home. And I'm listening to all this and trying to you know, just comprehend some of it. Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, when a whole nation was preparing for a normal day, something far from normal took place. Something heartbreaking happened that would change many of us and change our nation. And because of that terrible tragedy, many have asked the question, where's God? Where is God in all of this? Many Christians asked that question that day. Many non-Christians asked that question that day. And you know what I've discovered? There's some famous folks in the Bible that have asked that question. And I want to show you one of those passages this morning. It's from the collection of Psalms. It's a song, it's a hymn. Most commentators call this one of the classic David Psalms. Most of the time when you read and study this psalm, it is attached to Psalm chapter 9, but we're just going to look at Psalm chapter 10 today, because our time is so short. It's Psalm chapter 10. This is a time where, as David was writing, you could sense God is saying, "Well, where are you, God? I don't see you, and I don't sense you. I don't feel you. I look, and I can't find you. Where are you at? Where are you at, God?" Psalm chapter 10, start reading in verse 1. It says, "Why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide in times of trouble?" David was going, "I feel so isolated right now. With all the tragedy that has taken place in my life, why did you abandon me now? I'm so alone, God. I feel so alone. And when I need you, you're not here. Do you not see what has happened? Do you not care what has happened? I really, really, really need you, and you're hiding from me. Why are you hiding from me? Verse 2, the wicked in his pride persecute the poor. Let them be caught in the plots which they have devised. For the wicked boast of his heart's desire. He blesses the greedy and renounces the Lord. Lord, they don't even care. They don't care about what they're doing. They curse your name. And where are you? They brag and boast about what they're going to do to your people. They brag and boast about the people that they are going to kill. They brag and boast about the tragedy that they're going to cause. Where are you, God? Where are you at? And you remember that Tuesday morning 15 years ago when the wicked in their pride came to our country. They came to our great land that we call the United States of America and caused so much tragedy and heartache. I wanted to take a few moments to remind you what happened. And I won't take much time because I know that you remember. But I just wanted to remind you of a few things. It was 7:59 a.m. and American Airlines Flight 11 took off from Boston. It had 11 crew members, 76 passengers, and 5 hitchhikers. It was filled with 76,400 pounds of fuel. It was supposed to go to Los Angeles. At 8:15 a.m., United Airlines 175, it also takes off from Boston on its way to Los Angeles. It has 9 crew members, 51 passengers, also 5 hijackers. This flight was loaded with 76,000 pounds of fuel. At 8:20 a.m., American Airlines Flight 77 takes off from Washington. It is loaded with 49,900 pounds of fuel. It is headed for Los Angeles also. 6 crew members, 53 passengers, 5 hijackers on board. At 8:42 a.m., United Airlines Flight 93 takes off with 7 crew members, 33 passengers, and 4 hijackers. They are headed to San Francisco with 48,700 pounds of fuel. At 8:46 a.m., 5 hijackers crash American Airlines Flight 11 into floors 93 through 99 of the World Trade Center North Tower. The 76 passengers and 11 crew members and the hundreds inside of that building, many of them killed instantly. The crash severs all 3 emergency stairwells and traps hundreds of people above floor 91. At 8:50 a.m., the White House Chief of Staff, Andrew Card, alerts our president, George W. Bush, that a plane has hit the World Trade Center. The president, you'll remember, was at an elementary school in Sarasota, Florida, with some children. 9:03 a.m., hijackers crash American Airlines Flight 175, into floors 75 through 85 of the World Trade Center South Tower, killing everyone on board and hundreds inside that building. 9:31 a.m., speaking from Florida, President Bush calls the events in New York City an apparent terrorist attack on our country. 9:37 a.m., hijackers aboard Flight 77 crash the plane into the western side of the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., killing 59 aboard and 125 military and civilian personnel inside the building. 9:59 a.m., I'm home by this time. And I watched, as many of you did, the South Tower of the World Trade Center comes crashing down. 10:07 a.m., after passengers and crew members aboard the hijacked Flight 93 contact friends and family, they hear about the attacks taking place in New York, and they, as you remember, attempt to retake the plane. During the scuffle, the plane crashed into a field in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, killing all 40 passengers and crew aboard. 10:28 a.m., the World Trade Center's North Tower collapses 102 minutes after being struck by Flight 11. 8:30 p.m., President Bush addresses the nation, calling the attacks evil, despicable acts of terror, declaring that America, its friends and allies would stand together to win the war against terrorism. It's a day that none of us will ever forget. And I remember, even as I was reading that to you, I remembered the feelings of that day. I remember how I was so angry and how I was so sad. You know, so angry and sad that people could do this kind of thing. That they would have that kind of heart that they could do this kind of thing. Angry and sad that entire families are left behind grieving. Wondering what in the world? What in the world? You angry and sad because children would be wondering, where's mom? Where's dad? Why aren't they coming home? Angry because this was my country. This was my country. And they came into my country to cause so much pain and so much suffering. Who could do something like that? Psalm chapter 10 again, verse 4. Tells us who could do such a thing. It says, the wicked. The wicked could do such a thing. The wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. His ways are always prospering. Your judgments are far above, out of his sight. As for his enemies, he sneers at them. He said in his heart, I shall not be moved. I shall never be in adversity. These wicked people consider themselves above God's reach. They think they are out of God's reach. In their pride, they believe that they were above God's law. Verse 7, his mouth is full of cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue is trouble and iniquity. He sits in lurking places in the villages and secret places. He murders the innocent. His eyes are secretly fixed on the helpless. He lies in wait secretly as a lion in his den. He lies in wait to catch the poor. He catches the poor when he draws him into his net. So he crouches, he lies low, that the helpless may fall by his strength. The victims are just crushed under the wickedness of these people. Verse 11, he has said in his heart, God has forgotten. He hides his face, he will never see. Just absolute mockery of God in the evilness. And again, the question that so many ask, well, where was God? Where's God? And I can tell you God was there and God was waiting patiently. God was waiting patiently. And we don't understand, but we're grateful that God waits patiently. We're grateful He waited on us patiently. We are so grateful for that. Verse 12, arise, O Lord, O God, lift up your hand. Do not forget the humble. Why do the wicked renounce God? He has said in his heart, you will not require an account. Oh, what a fool he was. Because God requires an account from everyone. Everyone. But you have seen, for you observe trouble in grief. God's not hiding. He sees it all. To repay it by your hand, the helpless commits himself to you. You are the helper of the fatherless. Break the arm of the wicked and the evil man. Seek out his wickedness, and you'll find none. The Lord is the King forever and ever. The nations have perished out of his hand. Listen, you can go to the book of Revelation and you'll discover that one day God will destroy all evil nations. All evil nations. Verse 17, Lord, you have heard the desire of the humble. You will prepare their heart. You will cause your ear to hear. To do justice to the fatherless and to the oppressed. That the man of the earth may oppress no more. God will put all evil down one day. God will repay in his own time, in his own way. But right now, folks, we live in a broken world. We live in a broken world with broken people, and that's why things like 911 happen. And we don't understand. But here's something that I do want you to understand this morning. And I have been waiting all week to say this to you. We do live in a broken world. We don't understand why some things happen. But this is something I want you to understand this morning. We live in a great country. We live in a wonderful, wonderful country. I'm so grateful that God chose and allowed me to be born in this nation. Listen, I'm not blind, and I realize that we have some problems, and we have some things that we need to work on, but we are still a very great, great nation. The greatest nation in the world to live in. I remember a few days after the attacks in New York, I remember reading an article. It was an article written in a newspaper up in Canada. It was written by Gordon Sinclair, and you can probably go online and Google this and bring the article up. He was a Canadian television commentator, and he wrote this, and it says this, quote, "This Canadian thinks that it is time to speak up for the Americans as probably the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people on all the earth. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy were lifted out of the debris of war by Americans who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of these countries is today paying even the interest on the remaining debts to the United States. When earthquakes hit distant cities across the seas, it is the United States that hurries to help. And this spring, it was the spring of 2001, when 59 American communities were flattened by tornadoes, nobody came to help the Americans. Later, the Marshall Plan and the Truman Policy pumped billions of dollars into discouraged countries all over the world. Now, newspapers in those countries are writing about those warmongering Americans. I would like to see just one of those countries who is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar. I would like to see one of those countries build its own airplane. He says, does any other country in the world have a plane equal to the Boeing jet, the Lockheed TriStar, or the Douglas DC-10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except Russia fly American planes? Why does no other land on earth even consider putting a man or a woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technology, you get radios. You talk about German technology, you get automobiles. You talk about American technology, you get men and women on the moon, not once, but several times, and every time safely brought back home. He goes on to say, You talk about scandals, the Americans put it right on their front page for the whole world to see. Even their draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They are here on our streets in Canada. Most of them, unless they are breaking the law, are getting American dollars from mom and pa to spend here and enjoy the good life. When the railways of France and Germany and India were breaking down through age, it was the Americans who rebuilt them. When the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central went broke, nobody even loaned them an old caboose. Both of them were still broke at the time he wrote this. I can name you 5,000 times when Americans raised the help of other people in trouble throughout the world. Can you name me even one time when someone else raced to help Americans in trouble? I don't think there was any outside help, even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone, and I am one Canadian who's tired of hearing them get kicked around. They'll come out of this thing with their flags flying high. And when they do, they are entitled to thumb their nose at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of those. End quote. What a great country. What a great country we live in. And one of the reasons this is such a great country, it's because of men and women who have fought for our country, who have fought for the freedoms that you and I enjoy even today. It's men and women who fought in World War I and World War II and the Korean War and the Vietnam War and in Iraq and Afghanistan and on and on and on. And they fought and they sacrificed their lives so that you and I could even enjoy being in church this morning. And way too often, America is disrespected, and these great men and women are disrespected. And so I would just like to take a moment this morning to honor those men and women who have done so much for our country. And so if you have served in the military, I would like for you to stand for just a few moments. If you would, anybody all over the building, if you've served in the military, I would like for you to stand and just remain standing for just a few moments. Look at that, folks. Amen. Just remain standing if you can, please do. If you are here, and maybe you work with the fire department, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement, medical field, any of those that sacrifice daily to make our country great, to keep us safe, to put out the fires that take place in our life, to rescue, to walk into buildings that are falling down. You do so much also. And if you're here, I'd like for you to stand also. Thank you. Thank you, all of you. And please remain standing. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, can I say you are our heroes. You are our heroes. And there are not enough words. There's not enough plaques. There's not enough awards. There's not enough ceremonies. There's not enough sermons. There's not enough ways for us to tell you how grateful we are for you. There's not enough ways that we can do that. John F. Kennedy once said, "A nation reveals itself not only by the men it produces, but also by the men it honors, the men it remembers." Today we honor you. We honor you. We don't ever want to forget what you guys and what you ladies do. We never, ever want to forget. One of my greatest blessings is the freedom that I enjoy. and I owe you. I thank you for your service. I can't pay you. We can't pay you for what you've done and what you do. It's a debt that we cannot pay. And we thank you because without you, our society, it just crashes into chaos. It just becomes an absolute mess. Why is America great? That's why. That's why. Because of you men and women. Thank you. Thank you from our hearts. We love you. God bless you. God bless America. Thank you. ...9/11 changed our life. And it bothers me. It bothers me that even today, some people are going to disrespect our flag and disrespect our national anthem. And that's enough. I'm not going to say any more. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of you, and I'm proud of our flag, and I'm proud of America. And thank you, thank you, thank you. 9/11 changed our life and will never, ever be the same again. And I also want you to know Jesus Christ changed my life. And I'll never, ever be the same again. And maybe you're here this morning and you're having right now, you're having your own 9/11. You're having a most difficult time in your life. And you may be thinking, well, preacher, it's really hopeless right now. I want you to do me a favor and I want you to look around at everybody around you today. Just look at these people around you, including myself. We are people who have faced hopeless situations, and God has delivered us. And God will deliver you. Whatever you're facing, no matter how hopeless it may seem, God will deliver you. And just like America is rebuilding after 9/11, we're rebuilding our lives after something has happened in our life. Because that's what God does. Where is God? He's right here waiting on us. Right here, patiently waiting on us. So I'm going to invite you, if you would, this morning, if you'll stand with me. Right now, if you've asked that question, where is God? Right now, God is waiting on you. Right now, God might be waiting on you just because He's wanting you to surrender your whole life. You've surrendered most of your life to God, but there's some things you just haven't let go of yet. God's waiting on you. God's here. God's waiting on you. Maybe you're here this morning and you've never really given your life to Jesus Christ. And right now you're on that path to hell. If you were to leave this world today, you would spend eternity in hell. God's waiting on you. He's here and He's waiting on you. And I invite you to come forward and maybe share that with me and I'll show you. I'll show you how you can know Christ. Maybe you're here this morning and God has spoke to you in a way I couldn't imagine, because that's how God works. I can say one thing and God says something else to you. It's so amazing and so wonderful. I invite you to come this morning and pray. For others of you, you may want to come today. You might just want to have that thankful prayer. I'm glad I'm American. I'm glad I live in this great country. And pray for those who are struggling about living in our country. I know we have trouble. I don't want to go anywhere else. I don't want to go live anywhere else. I love this great country. And in this great country, I still can say, in God we trust. I still trust in God. And as long as we do, our country will remain great. Folks, y'all come on and sing. As they come and sing, however God has spoken to you today, you come and you pray, and it may be just a time just to give thanks. It may be a time to just just pour your heart out about the 9/11 that's going on in your life, but however God has spoken to you, come now.